What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
If you bump into somebody else, though, Cathal Gearan and from DCU, your meeting will be recorded. And it's not because Cathal is paranoid, but because he's life-logging. He's been recording almost every moment of his waking life for the last 18 years. Cathal, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
So you've been doing this for 18 years, is that correct?
Give or take a couple of months, yeah, 18 years.
Yeah, and you're wearing the device right now. What actually does it record?
Okay, so we've had various different devices over the years. This particular one we're using right now takes around about 1,000 images a day. It's just stores them then on our servers, and we analyze those to do some kind of AI analysis to understand people's life experience.
Right. Okay. And you're kind of using yourself as a guinea pig here in all of that.
Yeah, I believe if we're building technologies that are maybe going to be used by old people for independent living, that I should do it myself and understand what they go through in daily life.
Yeah.
It's part of the scientific process that we go through.
Okay. So the data has been collected on various devices over the year. And then is it in a server someplace?
We have very secure servers for this kind of data, as you can imagine.
Yes, of course. Yes.
But we do have servers that analyze this, and we have AI tools that analyze this data and then extract some kind of value. And that's what gives us this idea of a search engine.
Okay. And when you say a search engine, it's like it's not like Google, it's a search engine of your own life.
Exactly. Yeah. Imagine if Google turned backwards and looked at you only,
yeah,
and then could answer questions about you. So you type in a query like, oh, find the last time I was talking to Sean. Okay, and it'll say, oh, here, you were talking to Sean on this date, and then what did it do after that? Oh, you went for beers.
Yeah.
That kind of idea.
Okay, and just from pictures then, is it able to extrapolate all that information?
Pictures, we use biometric data, like your smartwatch. Like, are you happy? Are you sad? Are you moving? Are you lying down? Are you lazy? We also look at GPS locations. And we have other data too, like the computer, the words you type on a computer and stuff like that. We try to build a complete picture of a person, and then we use that to develop the search tools.
Okay, so the camera will know when you look back on this that you were in a radio studio.
It would know that. So I could, let's say 10 years later, I'm trying to say, when was I last on News Talk? Click, click, click.
Yeah.
Bang, there's the answer.
That's
when you were last on News Talk. Right now, AI, obviously AI is a topic of the moment, that's become so good that we can pretty much answer any query about a person's past life experience once they have this data source. So we've answered queries like crazy ones recently. Find a time I was praying to a golden Buddha in a tunnel. Bizarre stuff.
Yeah.
Sure enough, the AI tools come back and go, ah, there you were. You were in Thailand. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That's the kind of place we're at now.
But say more mundane things, because that, I suppose that's a standout one. So it's relatively easy for the AI to find. But if you say, when did I last, changing my socks.
Changing your socks. I'll give you a really good example of that. We work with medical practitioners around the world to develop assistive technologies. And one thing they came to us with was taking medication. Can you tell me when somebody was taking medication? And 5 years ago, this was hard. We didn't have enough data to build trained models for identifying taking medication. But in the last couple of years, this has become much, much easier. The tools, the AI is much better. So now we work with partners in New Zealand, for example, who have given these kind of devices to elderly people who live alone after operations. And they look at the data after a week and go, hey, you weren't taking your medication on time, or you didn't have enough social interactions this week. So that level of mundane stuff like doing the laundry, brushing your teeth, social interactions, they're really, really important to actually apply this to help people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we do that kind of work as well.
Big brother is nagging you.
Big brother, except it's little brother because it's you. It's your own data, right? It's really important. This is your data set that you can choose what happens to it. It's not like the Facebooks of the world who have all this data about you. This is actually yours.
Yeah.
We just have it on our server, and then you can query it, or you can let your medical professional query it, but nobody even has to see it. You still have the benefit of this.
How much data then have you, in the last 18 years, have you accumulated?
It fits on, fits on our servers, right?
Yeah.
Starting point. Probably, if anybody cares about 10 terabytes of data, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It probably would fill up 20 MacBook computers.
Yeah.
That's that kind no, of
yeah. That is a lot.
But now, it's important.
And in terms of its application, though, I mean, you've alluded to this already, people, elderly people, I assume people with dementia.
This absolutely. This is one of the key use cases. Just last week, I was in Norway for 2 days at a project meeting where we had dementia researchers and dementia practitioners with computer scientists. And we were trying to put together the two sides to build better tools. The idea is that we can assist people who have dementia to live independently for longer. And this is what we're working on. We just applied for a project just this week to do that. And from my own personal point of view, my mum passed away of dementia last year. So I actually genuinely have a really strong belief that we can do something special in this. And we can. It's almost going to be like Dependent that you wear, which has the emergency button. Except as well as having an emergency button, we'll just have this little sensor, this little camera that will take pictures. And then our AI tools will look at this and go, hey, you know, you're doing things that give you a fall risk. Let's let your medical practitioner know so then we can come back and try to avoid those. Because especially with dementia, if somebody falls and breaks their hip, it really takes a big lot out of them and takes a lot of their life expectation goes away.
Yeah. And then I take it that it's not just a situation where the user of this would ask a question, that it's able to make suggestions, as in time to take your pills.
Interventions. You haven't taken your pills yet. If you don't take your pills within an hour, you know it's not going to work out very well. So that kind of intervention is really another key part. It's part of that AI that sits over your shoulder and helps you. And that's the idea, especially for independent living of elderly people, really, really important. But maybe later on becomes important for us all. Maybe some student in university wants to study better. To a system that will know what they've read, how well they've read it, and will they understand it later? That kind of thing. We have personalized textbooks even going forward with this kind of technology. I'm really excited by it.
Right. Okay. So you see this as having applications down the road for everyone.
Everybody.
As a kind of an aid memoir kind of thing.
If I was to jump forward 20 years and we all have our smartphones in our glasses, this is an app that runs on your glasses, which looks at what you do and then makes interventions all day. Maybe if you have a very important meeting in the morning, you can say, hey, you know, don't take coffee after 5 o'clock. That's not a good idea. We know what happens when you do that. So this kind of assistive technology that's just there for you. Nobody else, no big company looks at this and makes recommendations or advertisements based on it. It's your data and our tools can analyse your data.
And GDPR concerns around this.
Of course, there's all kind of privacy concerns. In our work, we gather images, but anytime we ever let anybody see them, all the faces are gone. We build tools that automatically take out all identifiable data from it. So this is really important because sometimes we want to work with partners and they give us data from these kind of same cameras. We blur out all the faces automatically.
Yeah.
And that's almost 100% accurate.
So for a personal user's point of view, it might be useful not to have those faces. Who did I meet last Tuesday kind of thing.
So this is where there's a separation between the academic research, where we work on very strict ethical policies, and the real world application, which may be very important. If you are doing dementia care, then understanding who was visited is really important. My mum would have forgotten 20 minutes later that her son was there. Okay.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing is really, really important. Not just somebody visited, but here is who came and here's what you did. You had a cup of tea. And that kind of memory is really important. So although we don't do the face detection and recognition in our work, because we're obviously limited in that, it's a solved problem. In your Apple phone, you can find all the people. It tags the people for you. That's not a challenge in the commercial world.
Okay.
But in our academic world, we blur all the faces. We anonymize everything. So nobody, for example, you in this case, would never see yourself in this data set because your face will be blurred out.
Yeah. And so, you've been doing this for 18 years. Down the line, then, what do you envisage and how many years can this be an actual system that people could use?
Yeah, right now we're currently building an actual commercial system for use with healthcare practitioners. And that's a long process. We tend not to build hardware devices in Ireland, right? This is not something we typically do, but we're doing it. We're talking to manufacturers to build an end-to-end secure LifeLog platform. And then we have partners around the world, 5 or 6, who are just waiting for us to give them these devices, and then they can deploy them and use them in their real world. So we have the MVP we're working on to get out onto the market. That'll happen in the rest of this year.
Okay, MVP is
minimum viable product.
Right.
The basic piece of technology that some customer will go and say, damn it, I want that.
Right, okay. And it will be a relatively small thing, maybe worn
small,
as a
like
pendant.
A matchbox size. Worn as a pendant or clipped on, both will actually work. And the really key thing is that we can do all this analysis on this device. We've built it now so that we don't ever have to store a picture on the computer. It's all the picture gets taken, it gets processed by our AI algorithms, and then the picture gets thrown away. But we still know he didn't take your medication. Right?
Yeah,
and we can build the tools on that.
Yeah, and so is it Bluetoothing to another device when you're wearing it around the place, or
good
just storing?
There's two options: we have Bluetooth or USB, and that's the conversation we're having right now in our research team. We probably will Bluetooth in this initial version to your phone, that then copies securely to one of our servers, and then we analyze and we delete.
Yeah, okay. And have you found it personally useful?
Absolutely. I use it because I'm doing academic stuff, like boring computer professor stuff. I'm involved in a memory study with partners in the UK and in France who are understanding, using my data, how well a human remembers after 10 or 15 years. Okay, and nobody's been able to do that before because nobody has anything that's not a diary study.
Yes.
We have real data. And that's something that I'm doing, and I love that idea of that. I also use it when I have to prove something, like back years ago in Newbridge, I bought a parking ticket and I put it in my car and it flipped over when I closed the door. So I got the fine in the post and I came back and said, actually, hang on a second. Here's me buying the ticket. Here's me putting it in the car, and I could have the picture. And it said, please go away. Thank you.
Yeah.
So that works.
That's extraordinary. And have you actually, and that's very interesting then about that memory study. Then what is your experience of that been, in the sense of your recall of something that happened a decade ago and the actual reality?
The first part about 10 years ago, we're never about to do the second part. The first part was really great because it allowed me to realize how actually bad our memories are. We work on the assumption of this thing in our heads working really, really well. But in reality, we're getting confused. We're merging different past memories together. I could stand up here and tell you 100% sure something happened a year ago, and I may be 2 or 3 years wrong in my memory. We were amazed at how bad my memory was. Maybe some of the other people's memory is better, but in my case, I was amazed how bad my memory was in terms of just kind of study. And nobody had done this study before because nobody had X number of years of visual data. Okay. From their point of view.
That's extraordinary. Professor Cathal Guerin is a professor at the School of Computing in DCU. Cathal, thanks a million.
Thank you very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.